evening. An interesting topic. You all hear me? Balancing Torah, Mada, and culture. Now, let me preface my remarks by noting that the majority of the literature about balancing Torah and Mada that is found in the classical authorities deals with the respective obligations of learning Torah on the one hand and the worldly pursuits on the other. In this sense, the discussion is limited to the male gender. And for this reason, I'm not going to go spend too much time on it. As you, I'm sure, are all aware, Torah tells us, "V'limadetem osam es b'neichem," and the rabbis in Masechta Kiddushin say, "B'neichem v'lo b'noseichem." And therefore, the mandate that every man over bar mitzvah has to study Torah, and there's law, significant disputes, how much of the day must he study Torah, all his free time, a little bit every day and every night, and how this somehow will fit in with his worldly pursuits, that's a matter of dispute. To be very brief, Shulchan Aruch writes in Aruch Chaim Siman Kuf Nun Vav, when a person finishes davening and learning, a man, he should go to work. If he doesn't work, he's going to be poor. And if he's poor, it'll lead to a disaster. Hence, a mandate to go to work. On the other hand, in Yoredeya, there's a discussion about studying Torah and other pursuits. And here we read as follows, something fascinating. In Siman Reish Mem Vav, in the Yoredeya, Sif Dalet, a person should study Torah, etc., etc., etc. Rama says, "Ve'ein la'adam l'lmal ki mikra mishnah b'gemara b'poskim lo b'limud shara chochmos." Yes, Torah, no Mada. It's as simple as all that. You stop here, there's nothing to balance. Torah, yes, Mada, no. Then Rama hits. U'mikomakamuta luma b'akroi shara chochmos. One may study Shar Chochmos, other wisdoms, Ba'akroi. The obvious question is, a little bit of Chazer is okay. If the person is supposed to be learning all the time and not distracting himself with Shar Chochmos, so why is a little bit okay? This is the question. There is, of course, a proviso. Lo yu sifre minim. What does sifre minim mean? The books of heretics. That's out of bounds. So the obvious question becomes, if it's prohibited, intrinsically, sifrei minim, don't go near it. If not, so why are we balancing them? If a person should only be studying Torah, then why is he studying anything else? So the answer is found in this week's parsha. The whole topic for today is this week's parsha. You know, as a rabbi in a shul, you always think about the parsha. This week's parsha. I've had a lot of time to think about this week's parsha. That's 3 weeks. Right? Those who went to shul heard it 1 week, and then another week, and then another week. Keep hearing it over and over again. We've already heard it, I believe, 6 times, the beginning of the parsha, and it's still Thursday, and then it's Shabbos, of course. So here we are told as follows. Sukkim tell us, I'll go in order, because even though it's not the order of my presentation. Perek Yudches Posuk Dalet. B'chukoseyem lo teilech. Don't go in the ways of the non-Jews. Then, Es mishpatai ta'asu v'eschukosai tishmeru lo leches bohem. You will perform my laws. Lo leches for him. go with him. What does that mean? What does that mean? So, we are taught as follows. There is Mishpat Hashem, I'm reading that from Rav Hirsch, God's law, as opposed to Yitzira Midinis Enoshis, wisdom of man. What then is a person supposed to be doing? So, Rav Hirsch quotes in the Torah's Kohen, Lo leches bohem, to walk with them. And I quote, Asem ikor v'altasem tfeilo. Make the Torah the ikor, the main, and don't make it secondary. What does that mean? What does that mean? Rav Hirsch says we should not make the mistake. Remember, Rav Hirsch was the originator of Torah Derech Eretz. We should not make a mistake. Sholeinu lis alei mikol chokmo hanilmedes v'chutz l'yadus. We should cut off all culture and all other knowledge. V'shechovo aleinu lis nazer mikol mado. Sheinu nogeh b'meishor l'divrei Torah. No, we should stay away from everything. And that's wrong, says Rav Hirsch. Why? Asem ikar v'al tasem tfeila. You may involve yourself in the wisdom of the nations with one proviso, to make the Torah the ikar, the main thing. Shar chachmos will be mada'ei ezer. They are secondary to the primary. This is what Rav Hirsch writes, this week's parsha. And he goes on. Turns out that there is a place for Mada, which will translate as knowledge, and even culture. However, it's only in the context of the centrality and the primacy of Torah. Now this is true in the context of a man who's obligated to learn Torah all the time, and not nonetheless permission is given for him to close his Torah books and pursue other wisdoms as long as he recognizes that they are secondary Madoi Ezer. They're going to help out. The Rambam is perhaps the most famous of all those Gedolim of early times, Rishonim, who delved into all different types of secular knowledge. He was a practicing physician. Obviously, he went to medical school, right? as we say it today. He was a philosopher, wrote the Moreh Nevuchim. He did all these things. And yet, time doesn't allow for me to quote directly, the Rambam is here. In discussion, they asked him, what are you doing? Why are you spending all this time? He said, he swears that all the other knowledges you required are for him nothing more than, and I quote, Rakochos v'tabochos v'ofos, which means perfumers and butchers and bakers. Only missing the candlestick makers. That's Rakochos maybe. What he meant to say by that was that they are secondary. That's not the main thing. You have a house, and the house has to have a staff. So the staff, which keeps things going, that's the secular wisdom that the Rambam acquired. But the main, most important part of the house is the family itself, not the staff. They used to call it upstairs, downstairs, they still call it that. So that's the downstairs, there's the upstairs. The upstairs is the Torah. The downstairs is all the secondary wisdoms, which are in Ezer, as I first put it, or Rakochos Tabochos V'Ofos, as the Rambam put it, helping out a person to live a Torah life. And therefore, let us understand for a moment how this translates with respect to the women in the audience. So,
You probably are familiar
what the Shulchan Aruch says, it's a direct quote from the Rambam, as a matter of fact, that at least in those days, women were not encouraged to study Torah at all, or I should say almost at all. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam verbatim. It's a direct quotation. Isha shalomda Torah yesh la sachar. That's the good news. You're getting a schar for coming today. I mean, you can't get any credit in your tests, your finals, your class, but schar from Shemayim. Because isha shalomda Torah, she gets sachar. Lok schar ish, because the man is mitzvah v'yos. He's a big yetzirah to stop him from coming, because the yetzirah always tries to stop someone who's obligated, and not someone who's not obligated. But then he comes, tzivu chazal. Before I go any further, my analysis of Sivu Chazal is not an absolute requirement or prohibition. If you look up in the Rambam, Sivu Chazal, and now with the Bar Ilan, you can look up anything. I think it's 15 times, something like that. It's not referring to absolute prohibitions. Chazal give us advice, and their advice certainly is good advice when they give it. Shlo yolamed odam es bito Torah. Not to teach your daughter Torah. Most of the time, it's not going to work out well. And they said, it's even as if he teaches his daughter Tiflus, Varavera. Simple pshat is, in the olden days, women lived relatively simple lives. Teaching them Torah will make them much more sophisticated, especially Torah Sheval Peh, which is much more complex, analytical, and this sophistication in years gone by, could lead to sinful behavior, as opposed to the other option in those days. What was that option in those days? A simple life, which almost all women and many men led. They weren't intellectuals. They just did the right thing. Torah shebichsav, shouldn't teach a lechatchila, but it's not considered tiflus, that fear doesn't exist. So before we go, the Rambam writes and says, Isha chayeves lilmo dinim ha-shayochem le-isha. So a woman is obligated to study any laws which apply to her, which of course can take a lifetime, you understand very well. Some of you are taking halacha courses here, you can spend your whole life. I'm not discussing halachas which are not obligatory for women. Obligatory for women. Just came out of Pesach a few days ago. There's so many laws of Pesach, both the negatives and the positives. Women are obligated. And now we just had Shabbos 2 days ago. Shabbos. So you can spend a whole life. And then there's brachas, and then there's kashas, and there's taras and hashpacha. I'm only mentioning just a few. There's so many laws that can be studied a lifetime. But I want to add something. And that is, that even in the olden days of the Ramah, women also had to know the fundamentals of Emunah. A woman will say, Moshe Rabbeinu, who's that? He said, I'm not supposed to look at Torah Shebichsav. Avraham Avinu, who's that? You wouldn't say that's patently absurd. That's ridiculous. As a matter of fact, my Rebbe, Zichron Levracha of Salavation, would tell us that although there is an exclusion, B'neichem v'lo b'noseichem, as we mentioned in Moron Kiddushin, there's another thing in Moron Kiddushin, which tells us that a person is required to teach a grandchild Torah, as it says, V'odatam levanecha v'levnei vanecha, you should teach your children and your children's children. There he said, it's gender blind. Applies to fathers and mothers, sons and daughters, grandsons, granddaughters, grandfathers, grandmothers, completely gender blind. Because when the rabbis don't say explicitly, b'necha v'lo b'nosecha, it's gender blind. So it's just that. V'gadda l'vincha. We just had a Pesach. Tell me, in your house at the Seder, they spoke to you too? I hope so. Because we assume that bitcha means bitcha too. Only when the rabbis, the Torah Shabbat Peh, make it a specific exclusion. Otherwise, it's gender blind. And my rabbi would talk about the intellectual obligations and the experiential, and I would talk about the faith obligations that women are certainly obligated, even in the time of the Rambam. Fast forward to the Chafetz Chaim, who famously said, we live in a different world. And now women should be studying Torah. Because the alternative It's not the simple life that they used to live when they were, forgive the expression, illiterate. That's what the Chofetz Chaim writes. These women used to be illiterate. But now that they actually have gone as far as to study how to read and write, well, we better teach them Torah. Which my Rebbe added, what if they're getting PhDs? Better teach them more Torah. They shouldn't think that sophistication, intellectual jousting, which is stimulating, only exists in the collegiate department, not in the Torah department. My Rebbe was very fearful of that. So he advocated studying Torah at a very high level. Included in that are many things. Torah Shavah Peh could be one of them. Because today, forgive this, again, if I'm saying it, I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings. Even if you'll assume that the original words of the rabbis is it's Kim Alam the Tiflus, if you're teaching Torah Shavah Peh, it's as if you're teaching Tiflus, which is levity, which can lead to sin. If you don't teach them Torah, you're teaching them, forgive the yeshivish expression, tiflus mamish. Which goes out in the outside world today, it's not ke'ilu. I'll tell you what goes on in the outside world. It's frightening. It's really frightening. University campuses from coast to coast, inhabited by graduates of 12 years of Orthodox day school education, followed even by a year or two in Israel. They go off to these universities, and chalila v'chas, they could just fall off the wagon, as many do. I refer to a little pamphlet called Orthodox Assimilation on College Campuses by Drs. Pearl and Weinstein. You can get it online. That's the watered-down version. The original version was much stronger. And what were they afraid about? Two things. One was, we learn in the Torah, the rabbis say, Achrei Levavchem, ze minus, heresy, Achrei Nechem, ze znus, this is promiscuity, both of which are dangerous on college campuses. The second is much more famous, because it applies to every individual in that milieu. The percentage of individuals on university-wide were able to resist that culture. That's where culture comes in. That culture, you know what's called today? Hookup culture. I have to learn the new word. I don't want to say more than that because it's based measured with slur. I imagine you know what it means. That apparently is so pervasive that when they tried that, the pornography, etc., when they tried doing experiments to see how this, they can't even find a control group. Because everyone's involved in it. Yes, there are tzaddikim and tzidkonios, no question, who are somehow able to isolate themselves from the entire culture that they're living in the middle of that culture. That's tough. That goes back to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was called Avraham, what was the other word he used for him? Ha-Ivri. What's Ha-Ivri mean? Hu be'Eber Echa. He's on one side of the river, one side of the world, and the rest of the world's on the other side. He left their idolatry, but he also left their promiscuity. As Rashi says famously, Avraham was such a big tzaddik, you know, he didn't even know how beautiful his wife was, you know, looked at Rashi and Parshas Lech Lecha. The Vilna Gaon has a somewhat different explanation, the Vilna Gaon says, he didn't know that she was Yafa, but he knew she was always beautiful, but he thought she was always beautiful because she made herself beautiful. You know, a little makeup, a little this, a little that. You can make yourself beautiful. That's called chen. Sheker ha-chen behevel ha-yofi. Right? Esther knows his chen behevel ha-yofi. She wasn't physically beautiful. She was Yerach Rokas. She had a bad complexion. But her makeup. She made it. She knew how to make herself beautiful. So Sarah, Avram knew she was beautiful. She was, according to Chazal, the most beautiful woman ever. And Avram was not blind. But he thought maybe because she's always made up. You know, she's always wouldn't walk Dalai Lamas without, you know, which is not really necessary. I was at a wedding recently, and my wife told me, hey, the caller didn't wear any makeup. That was a tremendous compliment. I reminded her, they told me, when you got married, you also didn't wear any makeup. I wouldn't know the difference, but that's what they told me. So, you wouldn't be beautiful without makeup. I'm sure the people in this room are all in that category. But in any event, the Vilna Gaon explains, Hine no yadati, now that we're going to Mitzrayim, and you should want to make yourself ugly, so Paro and Hina shouldn't look at you, she didn't succeed. She was so innately beautiful, she couldn't make herself ugly. It didn't work. Now I see you're a Fasmare, not just Balas Chen. He always knew she was beautiful. That's a better pshat. Coral of pshat. And hey, but Avraham Avinu was known as a Tzanua. The Rami Prague writes that all the others were against the three big Averis, and Avraham was against the Avera of Gilead Arias. He was Tzanua to the extreme. Fine. So he avoided the idolatry, the paganism on the one hand, and he avoided the, how should we say it, that post that we just started with, starts, Kemasa Eretz Mitzrayim, and Kemasa Eretz Kanaan. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I should better open it up again and read it to you. Again, we're focusing only on really on two psukim, consecutive psukim. Yud Ches Dalet, and Yud Ches Hey. That's all you have to look. Those two psukim. That's all you have to know. Nothing else. Okay? And Rashi says, Maseim shel Mitzrim shel Knanim v'kulkola mikol umos. They were centers of immorality. Immorality. Of course, today America, in some sense, is such a center. Those who look up to what Chazal say, but Masa Eretz Mitzrayim, Masa Eretz Kanan, primarily it's different versions of sexual immorality. I don't want to go into spell out what the different versions are in today's world. They're all too known everywhere, unfortunately. So that's how the pasuk begins. So we have to balance Torah and Mada and culture. So for the man, it's a greater obligation of Torah versus Mada, because for him, Torah is obligatory. For the woman, for what's not obligatory, although there is plenty obligatory, there is all the laws she has to know, and the faith, and the basic philosophy, Kari Hamuna, which I guess in a sense part of Halacha, and even Mamon Har Sinai and the Abbas, and then, the story of the Torah, everyone has, even Satmar, who will not let the woman open a Chumash, never. But they learned, they have a Yiddish book called Senarena, where they pick up all the other stories and the basics, and they know it just as well as anybody else knows it. They know it. They just got from a different source. You have to know that. But beyond that, the potential obligation to study Torah every single minute, and even the parts of Torah which are not practical nowadays, women don't have that. So for them, the time balance of Torah versus Mada is not as pronounced. Although, as my Rebbe explained, since many women today, I assume present company included, are studying Mada, we'll call it knowledge, on a fairly high level, some more than others, but everyone's enrolled in college on a fairly high level, so it would be appropriate to study Torah also on a high level. That's why they have advanced Torah courses in this institution. I taught here for many years. It was called Advanced Halacha. It was as advanced as I could make it. And we studied many of these laws of Shabbos and Brochus and Kashrus and all kinds of things we spent time studying. And I gave hard tests. And it was, people shouldn't think that, it's just an easy ride. No, there's a lot of facts, a lot of knowledge which is required. Tonight's not the time to talk about whether Torah Shavah Peh, as such, Gemara learning, is advisable or inadvisable. The rabbi said it was, in those days it was inadvisable. Chavetz Chaim said that part of Torah now is advisable. Obviously, if it's a question of advisable or not, you have to take into account present circumstances. And present circumstances can change in all directions. It could have changed from 100 years ago to 50 years ago, and from 50 years ago to today, in different directions. But that's not the topic for today's discussion. I wrote something about this last summer. I was, as most people are, misquoted and misunderstood. But, yep, issues I can talk to you about privately. Here I have to talk about the culture issue. And I think it's perhaps the most serious matter we confront today. More tells us that tachlis chochmas tshuva v'masim tov. That all wisdom, the ultimate purpose, is doing good things. And in that sense, the chokhmas that we are studying here in universities have what to offer. As the Rambam said, they are an ezer, they are an aid to the understanding of Torah. You can understand Torah much better, Torah proper, if you understand mathematics, if you understand the natural sciences. Science is important. It's critical to the understanding of basic law. Just came out of Pesach, okay? So, there's an argument in the Gemara, can rice become chametz? So he asked an obvious question. You shall me. Do an experiment. I hear the word experiment. Let's go to a lab. What is this? This is a Gedolei Hador, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and his other colleagues. Yeah, do an experiment. Do it in the kitchen. I'll go to a lab in those days. But still experiment. You know what the more answers? They did an experiment. And they mixed the rice with the water, and something or other happened. And there was a dispute. Is that which was in front of them, is that called chametz or not? But they weren't, nothing, because they're not going to experiment. They experiment. Which is relevant to gluten-free, which I spoke about over Pesach in my shul, Shabbat HaGol. It's a very, you have to know the science. Of course science itself, but the natural sciences, for sure. Languages. I'm speaking to you now in English. I hope. Not too many errors. Because I studied English when I was young. If I wouldn't have studied English, I would only study Chumash with Rashi. I know maybe some Hebrew, but I wouldn't know English. So, to communicate, you have to know languages. And down the line, psychology. Psychology is in many ways, it's a science. And it's critical to understand people, to be able to help them. There is a slight downside in any endeavor. In biology, the downside is evolution, which even though the theory of evolution is such, does not necessarily contradict the Torah. Nonetheless, the way it's expressed, that there's no God, that's what they're basically saying, that certainly is against the Torah. Psychology, there's determinism. I mean, it's determined, you know, everything is in your genes, and your DNA, what do they call it these days, and you have no choice. Chas v'shalom, the Rambam screams and yells. That's what some of the quote wise men had thought in his day. No! If there's no free choice, they're not going to be reward and punishment to the whole world all about. The world is created to give us free choices. So there are negatives in all these things. But if you stay away from the negatives and study the positives, they can all be very helpful in understanding Torah and performing mitzvahs and living life. Life skills. It's all important. Mora tells us a man is required to teach his son how to swim. What's it? It's a life skill. It's a life skill. Today, it's not a drive. I guess I told my kids how to drive. Okay, that's don't spend too much time by the water these days, but thank God they know how to swim and they know how to drive. Sure. So, but these are life skills. You have to know, how to handle it. It's important. Reading and writing skills, these are skills which help you go through life. And of course, there are the arts. The arts are much more questionable. It's not clear what they really add. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, whose yahrzeit is coming up very soon, he believes strongly that the arts, which means English literature, I guess literature in general, and maybe music and art as well, enhance an individual's appreciation of the world, and thereby make him a better Jew. And I would never argue with Rav Aaron, who's my Rebbe. For those for whom it does, he was certainly one of them. Great. In his lifetime, there were those who strongly argued with him and said, listen, this is what you got out of Harvard in your day, in the many, many years ago. Today, they're selling other things in Harvard. I spoke about them before, I don't want to repeat them again. So it's really too dangerous to enter into such an atmosphere, which is now no longer what it used to be. It used to be what we call modern, and now it's what we call today postmodern. And I wrote this past summer that to be a modern Orthodox Jew, that's okay. Some don't want to do that either. There are the more will call, just to use a word, charedim, just to use it as a word, that try to run away from the outside world, from its culture, from its wisdom. I think that the word culture is critical. Just now I got a publication called Dialogue, and there was an article by Rabbi Miller, who's now in Canada. He didn't want to use the words modern versus Haredi. He didn't like those words. He used acculturated versus, I think he used countercultural. Culture, and he said, you know, what's the person thinking about? He's thinking about the culture of the day. I don't tell you what that means. The music stars, the sports stars, the actors, you know. In America, people live with that. You know, I mean, I don't know too much about it here. The radio, so I've seen some magazines, who won the Academy Awards and the Emmy Awards and the Oscar Awards. I'm not sure which exactly is which. But I know none of them is for Gemara, Rashi, or Tosfos. That I can tell you. So people live with that. And then there's a thing called March Madness. You ever hear that one? Just get out of it. You know what I'm talking about? How do you know what I'm talking about? How do you know? You attended March. Who in this room attended even one March Madness event? Nobody? Good. But how do you know about it? How do you know about it? Because the whole world knows that. That's all they're talking about. The basket went here, went there, shot from there, in the last second. And then, of course, there's a baseball season just started, and then it comes to the football season. I grew up in this country, too. I was the same way. I grew up a very acculturated American. Absolutely. I grew up near Ebbets Field. I was still a little young kid there. The Brooklyn Dodgers. Wait till next year. That was the culture. But I was there when the next year finally came. I think it was 1955, if I'm not mistaken. I was a little kid, and it happened. Like, they thought Mashiach was coming. Right? That's going to happen. Which show was going to happen first? The Dodgers win the World Series, or Mashiach's going to come? Unfortunately, the Dodgers won before the Mashiach came. Hope the Mashiach comes very quick. So I grew up that way. And I remember, I should be a little ashamed to say it now, but I do remember the Beatles, when they came on the scene. Yeah, that's how we lived. At the same time, we kept Shabbos completely, kashrus completely. I learned in yeshivas all my life. So we were acculturated Jews. The non-acculturated or countercultural Jews. So I claim, I go over the television in the house. It's a big deal. So we watched The Lone Ranger, and Father Knows Best. I don't know if we went to that. And we survived, you know. So my father would always, we would come and watch the ball. He goes, shtus. He would say, shtus. Yeah, but the shtus was right in his room. And he didn't bother us when we went. That was how we grew up. Fine. That was what we'll call ourselves culturated or modern, quote, Orthodox Jews from 50 years ago, approximately. The problem is, today, the Torah is the same. The Torah is the same, but the culture is not. The culture is not. In other words, yes, it's true. It's true that when we watched the World Series on TV, that when they wanted to sell either cars or toothpaste, they always had a woman. That's true. That was true even then. But she was presentable. I'm told, I know, now I'm sort of out of it, that these days, it's just not that way. They're selling everything with women who are no longer presentable. You know better than what I'm saying. And of course, we live in a world not of modernism, but of postmodernism. That means two fundamental things it stands for. Two. It's the culture of today. One, non-judgmentalism. You can't judge anybody else. As long as you're not hurting anybody, everything goes. That's not how the world, in the 50s, there was acceptable behavior and unacceptable behavior. Did people engage in unacceptable behavior? Oh, yes, they did. But they understood it was unacceptable behavior, and they tried to keep it quiet. You know, the president, the hero of my youth, was a man named John Kennedy. Ooh, he was a big hero. Turns out he was not exactly a paragon of virtue, apparently, from what they did. But no one knew about it at the time. The press kept it quiet. Later on, the things came out. Contrast that with the man who shares the last name with some very famous female candidate. That was just 30 years later, approximately. Churban took the whole country down 10 steps in its morality. Kids were asking, what's this? And what's, I don't want to say. To the whole world. And yeah, you had to get away with it. Do whatever you want. Everything's out in the open. You used to have to be married. No more. Could be a governor, but I don't mention any names. And yeah, v'chule. The culture is different. You do whatever you want, you're not hurting anybody, it's fine. That's the culture. And that's why we can no longer be part of that culture. You cannot. And that same issue of dialogue just came out. Rabbi Feldman Shlit of Ner Yisrael wrote the opening piece. It's only 5 or 6 pages, you should read it. And that's what he says. The culture of today is poison. Can't compare it to the culture of, he's older than when he was growing up. Very, very intelligent and accomplished individual. He writes beautifully. In his day, you could study these things, be part of the culture of the world to some extent, and still be loyal to Torah and mitzvahs, because the modernity of then and halacha and Torah were not contradictory. Didn't have to. The Hasidim never wanted to be part of the modern world. They were countercultural from the very beginning. But those who were acculturated into the then culture of America managed all right. There were always exceptions, but they managed okay. Today, that everything goes, so then you can't be part of the culture. You just can't be. You can't. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos. I'm not opening the Rambam because it'll take me too long. But everything is there. Maybe I should have. Trust me. The Rambam tells us in Hilchos Deos what impacts on an individual. He writes as follows. An individual, every person, Rambam makes no exceptions, every person is influenced by his surroundings. Every person is influenced by his surroundings. And the question becomes, well, what do you do if the surroundings are inappropriate for you? The answer is, find different surroundings. Different surroundings. What if you can't find different surroundings? That's a big problem. Perek Vav Halacha Aleph. Derech Briyoso Shel Adam Shlios Nimshach B'Deyosav V'Vamasav Achareyav V'Chaverav V'Noeg V'Minik Anshe Midinoso. So stay close with Chachamim and Tzadikim. Stay away from Yerushoyim. And if the Medina is no good, try to find a different Medina. And if all the Medinas are bad, famous Rambam says, go by, live by yourself. Live by yourself. Go to the caves, deserts. That's amazing. I'm not advocating that. I think you can stay right over here. But within this university, there are different kinds of groups. I mean, I'm aware of that. Stick with the appropriate, we use the word chevra. Okay, that's the word. Stick with your friends who are going to be individuals who are, as he puts it, tzaddikim and chachamim, or tzaddikos and chachamos. And stay away from the others. I'm not going to mention those names again. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. That's number one. Number two, the second poison of postmodernism is, and the two are related somewhat, there's no such thing as absolute truth. All relativism. You can't say this is absolutely true. So once that's the case, so then again, the two are related. Anything goes. You're telling me that this act is prohibited. Right? In this week's parasha, we read again. We read about, I'll just say it in Hebrew, it won't translate. Same parak. Since you'll, you gotta read it, because if you think I'm not going to make it up. So, we read Perek Yud Ches, we read until now, we read Pasuk Dalet and Pasuk Hey. I said that's all we're going to read. So I will say one more Pasuk, just to give an idea of something which is considered, always was considered true in the entire biblical world, called the Judeo-Christian world, was accepted as absolute. Ve'es zachol o seshkab mishkevei isha toevohi. Not translated. But not that, no. No more absolute truth anymore. Nothing. So, Someone who wants to do that, or something similar, you know, the New York Times once had an editorial attacking homophobia. I said, don't hide behind the Bible, because if that's not allowed, neither is adultery. And I say to them three Aramaic words. Have you heard of them? Ein hachinami, which means, you're right. So we have to be against both of those kinds of activities with equal strength and certitude and moral indignation goes against biblical ethics, which were accepted by the world outside. Well, it was. That's how it was. That's how it was. Were there people who violated? Sure. But they didn't do it publicly because it was unacceptable in society at large, in the modern society in which I grew up. Today, as you all know, everything goes. Publicly, with, quote, pride, everything goes. So therefore, we cannot be part of a society that rejects absolute truth. Because the most fundamental tenet of the Torah is that it's absolutely true. It's God's word. It will not change, cannot change, as the Rambam writes, can't. So, Satorah lo te mukhlefes. We say it in the Rambam, or we say it in Yigdal. That's in the Ani Mamin. Lo yachalif hakeh v'lo yomir daso lo olam nezulaso. Hashem's not going to change the Torah. I don't care what the Supreme Court says. The Torah doesn't change. I'll read you one more Rambam because my time is running out. The Rambam is Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Aleph. When he comes to explain the first thing we read today, B'chukoseyam lo teilech. So what that means in specific, you know, is you have to change. You should dress the way they dress. You shouldn't take haircuts the way they do. Some of these things are relevant these days. Listen carefully. Yia Yisraeli muvdo mehen, should be different than that. V'yodua v'malbusho, it's why chassidim wear what they wear. They wear different dress. I have to plead guilty. The dress, I'm wearing a Western suit with a tie. I'm indistinguishable from a non-Jew in the street by my dress. I'm not following the Rambam. So I follow my rabbein, who also dressed that way. And they said, we're not following a particular brand of dress of a particular, we're dressing like just a general dress throughout the world. Okay, so let's assume it's going to be okay. I hope so. Okay. I'll keep going. Uvishar Masov, he should be known, separate, distinct in his dress and his other actions. And here's the key line I discovered recently, which, wow. Kimo Shel Muvdo, just as he is different, mehen from them, b'mado is his knowledge, the way he thinks, uvid deoso, you are probably familiar with the word deos, Rama means midos, what we call. So the way he thinks and his character traits are different. This, says the Rambam, is the a priori assumption. B'chukoseyem lo teilech tells you, according to the Rambam, just as it's assumed from the get-go, and you think differently and your character traits are different, so too, how you dress and what you do should also be different. This hit me like, wow. One of my rabbinic friends told me years ago, someone from the more Haredi world, you know, the modern Orthodox Jews, you know what they are? They act like Jews, and they think like goyim. I was a little taken aback, and then I said, even if he's right, what's wrong with thinking like goyim? Where does it say you can't think like goyim? I never, where does it say that? So I found this Rambam. It's assumed. The whole book of Goseh Motelech is based on an assumption that you should be different than the goyim in the way you think and your character traits. You're much more refined, clean, honest, polite, and yes, your thoughts. I'm not just only discussing thoughts which are in and of themselves violations. A person thinks there's avodah zarah, that itself is a violation. Believes in idolatry, paganism, duality, trinity, chas v'chol. I'm not discussing that. We're discussing what I said at the very beginning. What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about sports and entertainment or you're thinking about Torah and mitzvahs. Now, again, a little bit of, we said the tofel, that could be okay, but it shouldn't be the ikar. That's the problem. In the world outside, even individuals of those who are keeping Shabbos and keeping kashrus, they are putting their primary mental focus not on Torah mitzvahs, but on the other kinds of activities. And this, I believe, is a problem which applies equally to young women as to young men. Because it's not so much the Torah, you have to, you know, the law, shas, and that's not the point. What are you thinking about? Are you thinking like the non-Jewish collegiates throughout the world, or even unfortunately some of the Jewish ones? Or are you thinking the way, I use the expression, a bas Torah is supposed to think? That the most important thing in the world is Torah, is mitzvahs. Yes, I'm not against your careers. I'm not a chalila. We said before, a career is fine. It helps you lead a proper Torah life. Yes, it's an ezer, as Rav Hirsch put it. Rakochas, tabochas, and opus, the Rambam put it. All very important. But what's your main goal in life? Your main focus? What do you really, really think is number one? The upstairs to the downstairs. So in our wonderful institution, luckily it's called Torah or Mada. It's not called Mada and Torah. And the Mada is the kind of chachma which the rabbis say, Tachlis chachma tshuva mas and Torah. All that's included in Mada. I believe in a liberal definition of Mada. I'm not restricting to the natural science. I'll include everything. But with a critical prerequisite. It has to lead to tshuva and mas and tov. And it cannot take you away as certain aspects, whether they be the natural sciences or the or psychology or the fine arts. We mentioned before, all three have certain dangers. You have to monitor how you approach these disciplines. And I'll be frank, you have to be monitor how you approach the Torah. Because there are now people who are studying Torah in a way which is also problematic. They have, you know what they call today in Israel? The Govainayim. That means they're looking at the others like, you know, I'm looking at you. Like, you know, I'm me and you're you. That is a total disaster. That's exactly what my Rebbe preached against. Vodatim levanecha levanevanecha. Chorev, how great Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest person ever lived. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, these are giants. We can't look at them, the Govainayim, and try to find mistakes and everything that they did. It's ridiculous. With the greatest of awe and reverence. This is to be our attitude, obviously much less so, but still, towards the previous generation, towards parents and grandparents. That's what the essence of Torah is all about. That's what, we just came out of Pesach. V'gata l'vincha. These days, come on, pop, I don't go for that. That destroys the entire transmission of the Mesorah from generation to generation. That was my Rebbe's most important word was Mesorah. So I'm an ending. My time is up. I can speak much longer, but I was taught to end on time. We should all be loyal to this Mesorah. We should be devoted to Torah and Torah study, proper Torah study, proper Torah practice. Yes, Mada is fine as long as it's not going to take us away from Torah, as long as it's secondary to Torah in axiology in terms of values. And culture was fine. But today's world, if you have any part of it, be very, very careful. The person who stays away from it becomes a non-acculturated Torah Mada Jew. A modern Jew, not a post-modern Jew. Tov olam bracha. Thank you very much.
So where this came from?
Yeah.
If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.